Emma, the first qu our question I'd like to ask you, really, and we've asked a lot of our interviewees, is how do you think that attitudes towards the gay community in Northern Ireland have evolved during your lifetime?
Well, certainly the big change for me is when I hear young people talking about being able to come out of school. I know that certainly wasn't possible or didn't feel like it was possible for people of my generation. None of these things happen in isolation. I think it's a wider cultural thing as well. I also know that that's probably not true for every single school, but I do know that there are plenty of schools that actively support their LGBT students. I think the other thing as well is we've now moved on in the political realm in terms of representation. So there's a number of parties that have quite high profile members of the LGBT community who are either MLAs or city councillors or in other political roles. So that's all changed. I also think if you think of something 2 years, was it 2 years ago? Time's so hard with COVID, but like DUP the Opera, which probably would have been banned, certainly much more angrily protested than it was when it was shown 2 years ago. And if you think of the comments that were made and widely accepted by the parties like the DUP before. Now, if a party member said something like that, even if it was a DUP party member, all of the press would be reacting quite strongly against it. Whereas at the time, it was kind of accepted as the dominant narrative. There are some really important bits of social attitudes research. So there's a survey that happens in Northern Ireland every couple of years called the Northern Ireland Life and Times Survey. And we know that in 2018, there was a huge, the majority of people in the country supported equal marriage, for instance. And I know not everybody in the LGBT community necessarily wants to get married or sees equal marriage as the most important thing to campaign for, but certainly as a way of measuring how equal we really are treated, then I think it's kind of a good signpost. And I think whenever I was a teenager, I lived in Wales and England for about 13 years. And a lot of the men that I knew in London from Northern Ireland were gay men, most of them, in fact, all of them, in fact, possibly. But the reason they were in London was because they didn't feel safe in Northern Ireland. Every single one of them had a story of violence, homophobic motivated violence. And although that obviously still goes on, I think it definitely feels like the community here is more open. There's always been an LGBT community. It's just been how able it's felt to be outspoken and raise its head above the parapet. There's, as you say, helplines that have been going from the 70s, and there's been activism. I'm trying to remember, was it the Lavender Avengers or the Lesbian Avengers? They were around a couple of decades ago. So it's always been happening. It's just. I remember a very early pride in the centre of London or centre of Belfast, sorry, in the 90s. I think it was maybe the second or third one. And I just happened to be in Royal Avenue when it was happening. And I was kind of internally and quietly, secretly thrilled that it was happening. But I had no idea how you got to know these kind of amazing people or how they all got together or how you found out information about it. Especially as a teenager, when you're a young teenager and too young to go to nightlife bars, that kind of thing. So I think it's great that organizations like the Cara Friend and then Common Youth are LGBT inclusive. There's the Belfast Trans Resource Centre. Lots of this stuff is now more open and available. So that's been a huge change, I think, and being able to see more high profile people who we maybe always secretly knew were either gay or some LGBT part of the umbrella, being more open and being more comfortable in the public eye about it. So yeah, there's been a big change, I think.
And one of the things we're very interested in is the change in lexicon, the change in language about how we talk about the queer community and gay people. And we had asked several of our older respondents, what the terms gay and queer and trans meant to them when they were younger. And one respondent said that they simply didn't exist, and that he felt his gay identity was related to effeminacy. He said he was called a poof and a pansy. So when you were growing up, what did the words gay and queer mean, and what kind of associations did they have?
I think queer was definitely, it felt like more of a slur when I was a teenager, and the faggot or lesbian was quite often used as a slur towards teenage girls if they were seen as not interested in boys, or frigid, or whatever the word is. You must be a lesbian, because clearly that's the only explanation why you're not interested in this man, so I think there's even a little bit of if you described yourself as a feminist, some straight feminists might have said, I'm not like a hairy butch in dungarees, as if that was like one of the worst possible things you could be as a woman. Still a little bit of that goes on, it's not as bad. So I think a lot of the really important work is the reclamation of those words. And there's a brilliant organization called Dykes on Bikes, for instance, that are in the London Pride, and queer has been reclaimed as more of an intentional identity. So gay is more about who you're sexually attracted to, or bisexual or lesbian, whereas queer, I think, is more about saying my identity doesn't need to assimilate into your heteronormative kind of way of thinking. And I think there's a lot of really great projects based on, or that come out of this idea of queer as opposed to LGBT or rainbow assimilation. So things like Outburst Arts, the Outburst Arts Festival, which I would have attended whenever I could, but I'm now very luckily on the board of. They very much describe themselves as a queer arts organization. So maybe the vote for marriage equality wasn't their priority. Maybe it's about allowing queer identities to be seen and appreciated and loved rather than just tolerated, about different ways of doing relationships, different ways of doing community organizing, different ways of social support and mutual aid. So, and I think, I think it's really understandable that words will change. I mean, there's probably words that we use now that will be very different in 10 or 15 years' time. And I know something that's particularly an issue for lots of people now is around pronouns. And I think we're still all kind of finding our way with that. And it might not be what everyone settles on. We might invent a whole new vocabulary, for instance, to talk about gender. But at the moment, language is a tool that we try and use to communicate clearly with each other. And I think art is just a different tool that we use to create a way of communicating with each other. But some people, I guess, treat language as more immutable than it actually is. But also we have to remember how harmful slurs are. And I'm glad that there's some words that were used before that aren't used, and that there are comparisons that are rarely used anymore. Although I remember driving into Belfast one day and hearing Jim Wells on the radio on a Stephen Nolan show, and he compared LGBT lifestyle, as he called it, to bestiality. And I remember I felt a bit sick and I felt angry and I felt upset. And I think it was I've had to be in the radio with that man because of my my work on abortion rights. And for some reason that hurt me more than anything else that I'd heard him say. I don't know why. So there, you know, those attitudes persist and those comparisons persist. But you know, 2 years ago the Newton Ards town hall was lit up in rainbow colours. And the idea of that happening 5 years ago would have been unheard of. So, you know, it's all about incremental changes here, there and everywhere, isn't it?
It is indeed. And one of the things that has been very interesting coming up in the interviews is this idea of double identity within the gay community. One older respondent said that he felt as if he was leading a double life in terms of talking and socializing with close friends and family, as opposed to socializing with his partner and other members in the community. And I think repression as well. And one of our younger respondents said something I think very poignant and very interesting, I think, that isn't considered. And she had said that for a long time, she was a young lesbian, really, and she had repressed her feelings for young women because she felt that she was projecting the male gaze upon her young friends, you know, and she felt that this was wrong, you know, rather than just expressing her identity. So how damaging do you think this idea of double identity and with reference, I suppose, to lesbian identity, this projection of the male gaze has been has affected the gay community here in Northern Ireland?
I think when you're swimming in the water, it can be hard not to just replicate that, you know. So it can be very hard not to it can be very hard to critically think about your own internalized issues. So if you've got your own internalized sexism or internalized homophobia, and you know, most of us do, because we were fed it through culture, through politics, through community, through religion, through education. So you'd be some pop if you hadn't been affected by any of that, you know. But I think something that I love about queer community and LGBT community, and certainly the interactions I have, for instance, with online blogs or online communities or whatever, is this willingness to critique interpersonal relations from a power dynamic basis and from a basis of liberation politics. And it doesn't mean that LGBT people do relationships better. it just means that for a lot of people, there's hopefully a better intentionality about how they interact with other people. I think as well, if we look at popular culture and for many years, how the only way you would interact with other gay people would be in bars. And a lot of the music and music videos and all the rest of it replicate those kind of sexist ideals that you're talking about, then it can be very hard not to replicate that. And you would have to be extremely aware and self-conscious not to. And I think something that would really help with that would be consistent relationship and sex education in schools. It was compulsory, that wasn't from a religious basis, that was about being inclusive, that was also about interpersonal safety, that was also about consent, that also included LGBT people. And gender identity and all of those things that are really important. And if we talked about that, and if we talked about where even our cultural ideas of beauty or attractiveness come from, then I think there's, you know, there's so much that could be so good for our mental health and the mental health of all young people, not just LGBT people, if we had a more inclusive you know, science-based, co-produced by young people, you know, telling them what they wanted and needed to know rather than telling them just not to have sex until they get married, assuming that everybody just wants to get married to an opposite sex partner. And we know from young people in Northern Ireland that they want more of that. That's what they want and need. But also from a safety perspective, from an STI perspective, from an HIV perspective, from a sexual violence perspective, all of these things are really important.